Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions that you've left for me in the comments section of my videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. This is the 25th episode, which, you know, is sort of an arbitrary number because it's really just 25, but it's a quarter of 100 and half of 50, and it's a big number for, you know, for most humans. So this is the 25th episode. I have been having a blast doing this. Thank you for all the questions you guys have sent me so far. Keep them coming in, and we will just carry on with this. I didn't know how far this was going to go when I started it, but it's just keeps going. So we got some great questions this week. Let's get to it. Pixelate you. You seem to have recovered so well and so quickly compared to the many ex-JWs I know who were in the cult for a similar amount of years, including myself. That's all the more surprising considering that Scientology seems to do a much greater mind on the followers than even the JWs, but of course there's no good or healthy cult. What has been most helpful to you in your own recovery, and what would you recommend to new cult escapees? Recovering from a cult is a long-term process that takes, you know, months, years, maybe the rest of a person's life. That's how I think I'm going to be doing my recovery, quite honestly. But in terms of things that help, adopting critical thinking is a really good place to go. And I was so happy that I came across this subject and started learning about it so early on after I got out of Scientology while I was still in the you know, headspin of having gotten out of it and finding critical thinking through James Randi, Carl Sagan, Penn and Teller even, you know, and their shows and talks on the subject of critical thinking, skepticism, science, rationality, and reason. I also found skeptic.com to be very, very helpful to me. It's a online magazine that features skeptics talking about skeptical things and lots of woo, lots of paranormal debunking and religious nonsense being debunked there and that sort of thing. Not that I'm saying all religion is nonsense. That's not what I'm saying. Just when they get up to nonsense, they can get up to some pretty crazy nonsense, especially in destructive cults. So it was good to get that sort of, you know, debunked by learning about skepticism and critical thinking. So, other than that, I also found a book by Steve Hassan called Combating Cult Mind Control. I met Steve in Toronto at the Anti-Scientology Getting Clear conference, and he was great. And I read his book, and it really helped me a lot. I cannot recommend reading anything from him, especially Combating Cult Mind Control, because it really goes into what the cult think is and how destructive cult leaders operate and how they gain mental, psychological, and emotional control of their members and how you can break free of that by learning about it. Education is essential. It is not enough to get out of a cult and just walk away. Not if you want to actually fully recover from it. You must educate yourself on what destructive cults are and how they operate and what the cult leader's playbook consists of, because you find in doing education on it that it is the same playbook from one cult to the next, to the next, to the next. The JWs really aren't a whole lot different from Scientology, aren't a whole lot different from the Moonies, aren't a whole lot different from David Koresh's Branch Davidians. A cult leader does certain things in order to get people to follow them, and those things, you know, are based on psychology and our emotional makeup. By learning how they operate, you free yourself from the lasting influences of the cult and its sort of its hold on you, and also kind of, you know, free yourself emotionally and mentally from all that stuff. So those are the sorts of resources I've taken advantage of that I highly recommend. And actually, on my blog, mncriticalthinking.com, I have a recommended reading list, and you can go to that and check that out too, and I'll put a link to that in the notes section of this video down there. Lynn Seymour. I am a retired psychiatric nurse practitioner who has become fascinated by Scientology and its mind control methods. 15 years ago, I was teaching psychiatric nursing at a state university and had two young men in my class. They kept to themselves, did not mingle with the other students, and seemed uncomfortable with the class material, as well as the clinical experience in my psychiatric nursing course. After the final exam, they told me their beliefs about psychiatry, which were, of course, shocking to me. They confessed that they thought all psychiatrists were evil and were intentionally trying to harm people. They asked me if I had ever heard of Scientology and invited me to their church. I politely declined, and as they were walking away, they turned and said, "Oh, she's just a wog." At the time, I had no idea what that word meant. Do you know if Scientology in the past has actually sent some of its parishioners or CIRC members to universities to become nurses? This is a chilling thought, as I do not think that the philosophy or practice of nursing would be compatible with the belief system and practices of the cult of Scientology. In all the years that I was in Scientology, I never heard of anything like being having Scientologists sent in to learn about psychiatry or take university classes or get a degree in psychiatry. That just, I never heard of that, and that would be so counter and contrary to all of Scientology's beliefs and their entire structure that I don't think that's an approach that they would take. I do know Scientologists who have been who have had to take university classes in psychiatry or psychology in order to get credits as part of a standard lineup in order to get their degrees. And they always protested it and, you know, hated it and talked about it and criticized it, but they had to take the class or they couldn't get their degree. And so that's that may have been the case here. You mentioned a psychiatric nursing class, which seems to me to be more than just a general psychology or psychiatry class. So I'm a little curious about it, actually. This was 15 years ago. I don't know where this was or you know, what university we're talking about here. So it's really impossible for me to say that it wasn't some kind of a covert op on the part of the Scientologists. But if so, you'd think they'd be a little bit more circumspect about it and wouldn't just come up to you and, you know, be critical and invite you to the church. I've just never heard of anything like that. Scientology hates psychiatry. They don't just feel neutral about it or feel like it's sort of, you know, not a very good thing. They hate it. There really isn't a stronger word to use for their attitudes and ideas about psychiatry, because Hubbard minces no words in talking about the destructiveness of psychiatry, and he's talking about psychiatry as of 1950, 1960s. You know, one flew over the cuckoo's nest kind of psychiatry is what he's talking about. And there has been a lot of change, a lot of reform in psychiatry since then, as I came to learn after I got out of Scientology. So I can talk, you know, about the horrors of psychiatry quite intelligently for a number of hours, because I know a lot about its history and some of the awful stuff that it used to do. And it was awful stuff, you know, and I'm not necessarily really, you know, gung-ho about psychiatry now, but I don't hate it anymore, and I would never hesitate to refer somebody to a psychologist or a psychiatrist if I felt that the situation warranted it or they needed it, because, you know, Scientology sure as hell isn't filling the gap. They're not treating any mentally insane people. They have no plan and no idea of what to do with insane people. And when you look at cases like Lisa McPherson, who died in the late 80s under Scientology care when she was clearly having a psychotic break, the Scientologists have no concept of how to actually deal with mentally ill people. So they're the last people who should be saying anything about what should or shouldn't be done with people who have mental illness. G. Fox, is there any affiliation between the Church of Scientology and Landmark International? Formerly EST. An acquaintance of mine went through that program, and when she described it to me, it sounded very familiar in structure. There definitely are connections there. I believe Werner Erhard, who started EST, was actually branded a squirrel in Scientology because he was using Scientology techniques and methods and teachings in EST, in what EST was doing. And in fact, in Scientology, if you come into Scientology having done EST or Landmark in the past, there's some auditing that they have set up for you to do to repair your experience in EST or in Landmark, because it's squirrel Scientology, right? And they don't want you confusing the two. So yeah, there are connections there. I think Werner Erhard at one point, this is all according to my experience when I was in the church, so I don't know if this is true or not. I didn't, you know, look him up on Wikipedia or something. But I, from what I knew about that subject, I think he practiced Scientology at one point, and then he went off on his own and just took parts of it and made up his own cult. And so you had Est, and then that became Landmark. Brian Reed, do Sea Org members vote or take an active interest in politics? If so, do those in charge influence the membership to vote in a particular way or for particular candidates? Does the Sea Org vote as a fairly homogenous block, or are political opinions within the organization as varied as the general populace? Sea Org members do vote. Many of them don't bother to, but they can. In fact, when I was in Los Angeles, the polling place was at the Church of Scientology of Los Angeles. So it was very easy to just walk up there and vote, and a lot of Sea Org members did. Some would study the issues and the candidates, and some wouldn't. I think most didn't. We would get briefings from OSA about which candidates or which issues were important to the church based on whether they were anti-psychiatry or were favoring a candidate who was pro-Scientology. In other words, was somebody who would listen to us and approve our, you know, street closures or our programs in the schools or programs involving the police force, you know, passing out the Way to Happiness booklets and things like that. If we had people who were favorable to our cause, then those were people we wanted to keep in office. And so OSA would brief us on who those people were so that when the vote came around, we could vote for them. But we didn't get any kind of, like, you know, piece of paper that said vote yes on 23 and no on 24 or something, like, you know, in terms of propositions or candidates or anything like that. It wasn't that rigidly controlled, or the briefings weren't that tightly controlled. We would get these general briefings and be told this candidate is somebody we favor, right? And so everybody would, oh, okay, good, I'll go vote for that person, you know, for those who voted. I think the general, there's a, you know, a sort of an uncaring attitude within the Sea Org about what goes on in the real world, because they're so nose to the grindstone and so busy doing what they're doing to save the world that they don't really participate in it or take much part in it. And they don't consider that government or voting or the civil structure or any of that is really too important, because they think that within their lifetime, they're actually so deluded that they think that within their lifetime, within this generation, Scientology is going to clear the planet and sort of take over the world and set up its own structure. They talk about that. So, and then not through military action either. I mean, they just think that everybody's going to become Scientologists. And so it's just going to evolve into this Scientology world. And nobody in Scientology really thinks through the thought of what that would mean or what that world would be like. You know, us in the X community, we've sort of looked at that and realized that it would be a lot like North Korea. Not a happy place. Not a place I'd want to live. Scientology world would scare the hell out of me. It would be Big Brother to the nth degree. So anyway, so as far as voting goes, you don't necessarily find a lot of variation, by the way, within the church. Most church members are very conservative, tend toward Republican. But there are Democrats, or there are people who have, you know, liberal, maybe fiscally conservative, but socially liberal, or vice versa, right? Generally speaking, they're, you know, anti-abortion, they're very conservative fiscally, they kind of slant toward Republican in terms of government, but I think a lot of Scientologists also have or try to have a compassionate view about things and want, you know, there to be welfare program. Well, actually, not necessarily want there to be welfare programs, actually. No, not so much. Because they think that's out of exchange, right? And they think those homeless people and the people who are down in their luck, it's all their fault, right? So again, it's pretty conservative, actually, as far as that goes. I'm sort of thinking this through as I'm answering it right now, because I actually changed quite a bit after I came out of Scientology and started looking at social issues and looking at what was going on in the real world, and became much more liberal leaning in my own attitude towards social issues, especially, right? LGBT, welfare, homeless, things like that. So the conservative aspect was more my experience. And believe me, politics is not something that's very important to most Scientologists. They don't pay a lot of attention to it, especially in the Sea Org. Other than presidential races or something, hardly any politics is really the subject of any discussion. Joe Channon, I have a statement, not a question, but I would like to hear your response to it. In an earlier video, you talked about the way that dangerous cults foster an us versus them mindset into their victims. You ended with saying something like, that is never true. I live in a place, I shouldn't name names, where people are deeply divided along racial, religious lines, where people can be hurt and even killed for literally no reason for hatred. Now, I do not know anyone who would not like to go be at peace. I do not believe there is anyone who does not recognize that the other people are real folks who deserve respect and life and all that. But at the same time, our lives are in danger. Our children are in danger. That is paramount. It is literally us versus them. Nobody alive created this situation. We just have to live with it. The point is that sometime us versus them is true. Sometimes it is reality, and one must face reality as it is. Well, yeah, of course there is. You know, when there is a war or a conflict or a real world situation where you have, you know, the reds and the blues and they're fighting each other, that's clearly us versus them. And in a situation like that, one generally needs to take sides based on their religious, racial, social, ethnic, national, or whatever other opinion they have, and, you know, go for whatever, you know, victory they're trying to achieve. There's lots of conflict in the world. The us versus them mentality that I'm talking about with destructive cults is an artificial us versus them. It's a created situation where you have people who shouldn't be at odds, who have no reason to be at odds at all, and yet suddenly they are, because a dangerous cult leader, whether it be a religious cult leader, political cult leader, social issues, whatever the cult is that we're talking about or the group is, they create a mindset in people where these people now feel that the rest of the world is not on the same page they are and is against them somehow. And so they need to act in their own self-preservation and for their own survival against the rest of the world. And that is a very dangerous mindset to instill in someone. And that is what destructive cult leaders do. So that was the us versus them mentality that I was referring to. Milzy Cooksey, I'm still curious to know what your opinion is on Shelley Miscavige. What do you think happened to her? This question has actually been answered pretty thoroughly by Tony Ortega on the Underground Bunker blog. So I'll put a link to that in the comments notes section below here. But as far as, you know, answering the question, she is holed up at a place called Twin Peaks, or the Church of Spiritual Technology. It's an organization of Scientology that's not very well known about, that is responsible for getting all of L. Ron Hubbard's works, his written and spoken works, recorded or transcribed onto metal plates, titanium plates and whatnot, so that they will survive a nuclear war. And they have these gold discs that are like CD or, you know, old records. And they have titanium plates that they've, you know, that they're etching Hubbard's works on, all so that Hubbard can, you know, fulfill his goal of smashing his name into history by being around forever, even in the case of, you know, some sort of world annihilation. All of his, you know, Scientology stuff is still around for the next civilization. Scientology is really doing this, and they really are investing a lot of money in it, but there's a small crew of people up in this very highly secured facility up in the mountains, I think by Arrowhead or somewhere around there, up in the mountains of San Bernardino, California. There are a couple other locations too. I think there's one in New Mexico, and I think there's another one up in Northern California, and maybe one over in Wyoming or something. There's a couple different of these locations. And that's what's going on there. And they have a small core of people who work on this. Shelley was relegated off to work there by David Miscavige back in like 2005 or 2006 or something, because she did some things that really pissed him off. Shelley is not somebody that I have a lot of sympathy for personally. I never knew her, never even met her, so I don't have a personal relationship with her. I just know that she was married to David Miscavige for, you know, 3 decades before she was relegated off to Twin Peaks. And Shelley's used as sort of a poster child of the, you know, what David Miscavige will do to you or how bad Scientology is. But the fact of the matter is that she stood side by side with David Miscavige for, you know, through the 80s, 90s, and into the 2000s, and had no problem with what he was doing, and never stopped him, never stood up to him and said, what you're doing is wrong and completely a violation of everything Hubbard ever said, or anything, you know, that makes common sense, and so I'm not supporting you anymore. That's not what happened. Shelley Miscavige got sent off because she tried to comply with David Miscavige's orders. She actually tried to do what he said he wanted done, and his her punishment for that was to get exiled off to Twin Peaks. You know, so and she could leave. She hasn't. The rest of Miscavige's family has left. His father has left. His brother has left. His niece has left. So it's not like she couldn't leave Scientology if she actually wanted to. So I don't really get her, you know, but I don't have a lot of sympathy for her. But it is certainly a good question to ask, where's Shelley? Because it certainly puts David Miscavige on the hot seat, because that is still his wife. And it's, you know, worth bringing to the public's attention that David Miscavige is not a very nice guy and does stuff like that, even to somebody as close to him as his wife. 722 Daba. Can you tell us what has changed for you emotionally? What do you feel now that is different from your years in Scientology? I know you have said that in Scientology you had learned to hide your emotions and pretend that everything was just fine. What is it like for you to no longer have to control your feelings? Frightening? Freeing? Exhausting? Thank you for the very interesting and informative videos. I've enjoyed every single one of them. You're a talented writer, speaker, and presenter. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your kind words. I've made a lot of progress in the last couple of years since I got out of Scientology in terms of freeing my headspace of the frantic, urgent, emergency craziness that is life in the Sea Organization. And that has been very freeing. That has been very clarifying and very liberating for me. I have a lot more time to reflect on things and think about things and study things and stuff like that. I still am a very hard worker. I'm working all the time. I just am always like that. And I don't know that I'm ever going to stop because I have a lot of things I want to do. But it's not frantic anymore. I don't freak out about things like I used to. If I don't get stuff done or if things are happening that are out of my control, I don't lose it like I used to and wonder what am I doing wrong. I no longer feel that I'm personally responsible for every single thing that ever goes wrong in my life or anybody else's life, because, you know, life is life. It happens, and it just moves forward whether you want it to or not. You know, so I've learned to accept a lot of things that are not under my control and never will be. And I'm okay with that now. It's a whole different worldview. The responsibility thing was a big deal in Scientology because everything is always your fault. It always comes back to your responsibility. And they say that in Scientology, they say that responsibility is not supposed to be blame and isn't supposed to be fault and nothing's your fault. But, you know, when you're being held responsible, meaning you're the one who's being punished for when things aren't going well, even though those things were totally out of your control, you get a little bit of a frantic mindset about that. You start, you know, getting this hunted feeling all the time because you're always wondering when the axe is going to come. You know, when is the hammer going to fall? I constantly used to feel like I was living my life under a guillotine or under a hammer, you know, and it was just going to fall on me at any moment. You never knew when it was going to come. You never knew. You could be in favor one day and you could be the whipping boy the next. Just that fast. That's all gone. My life is now totally my own, and it is wonderful just because it's my own. You know, when I talk about how good my life is, how happy I am, it's not necessarily because I'm making lots of money or have lots of things or, you know, found the perfect girl or something like that, because actually none of those things have happened yet. But I'm happy because I'm free of the shackles that were around me that I didn't realize were there. And that's great, you know. So the emotional freedom to feel what I want to feel and experience what I want to experience and be able to experience things and know that it's okay. The other part of this is, in Scientology, they instill in you the idea that anything like anger or fear or grief or sadness or any sort of emotion like that, they call it misemotion or negative emotion. And they, when you're feeling that way, they make it seem like that's a bad thing and you're not supposed to feel that way. And so you have this idea that if you do feel that way, that's wrong. And what you need to do is you need to put a smile on, and you need to out-create it, right? You need to create it that you're happy, even though you're not happy. It's really crazy. And it's all based on this little saying that Hubbard came up with called the joy of creating, where he said, force yourself to smile and you'll soon stop frowning. Force yourself to laugh and you'll soon find something to laugh about. The greatest joy there is in life is creating. Splurge on it, right? Now that sounds very nice and it sounds very uplifting and it's like one of these motivational posters. But in Scientology, it's how you live. You literally adopt that as the way you're supposed to live. Oh yeah, another line in there is, a being causes his own feelings. Sorry, I didn't, you know, it's been a while since I've had to recite that. So a being causes his own feelings, right? And so you're given the idea that how you feel is 100% on you all the time. So that's not true. That's just totally not true. You know, when life happens, if somebody close to you dies, as did recently happen to me, you feel like shit. And there's nothing you can do about it. You just feel that way. And it's sad and it's horrible and it's not fun. And there's no reason that you should be putting a happy face on when you feel like that, because that's how you are supposed to be feeling. So recently that happened, and recently I went through that, and I wouldn't have been able to do that when I was in Scientology. I would have had to push those negative emotions away and feel something different, force myself to smile and be cause over my feelings. It's just ridiculous. And this is the facade that Scientologists wear all the time. And they are so fake because of it. And it's sad. It's sad that they do that to themselves. It's sad that I did that to myself and that I pushed that off on other people, that they should do that too, because it was wrong. So that's how I've been doing since I got out, and emotionally, and it's been wonderful. And so we come to the end of another episode of Critical Q&A. I hope you enjoyed some of the answers to these questions, and I also hope you'll check out my latest podcast and latest video with Robin, latest installment of our interview where we get into talking about the Office of Special Affairs and her experiences with that. We have one more episode with her this next week coming out, where she's going to be talking more about OSA and her experiences there. And then I have another surprise interview coming up the week following that, which is not directly Scientology related. And I think you guys are going to enjoy that one. It should be interesting. So thanks for coming around. And thank you for watching and sending in your questions. And I'll see you next week.